Hello and welcome to Diane's Kamikaze Fun Machine, the podcast. I am Diane, sometimes known as Diane Kamikaze. The first 138 episodes were tied in with Diane's Kamikaze Fun Machine as they were all guests who appeared on the program. I am currently on the air on WFMU's Rock and Soul radio stream, Wednesdays from 9 a.m., and I don't include interviews in that program. So these are special little pieces that I'm bringing to you because they're fun, funny, weird, or important. I'm a rocker for life and I'm a retired tattoo artist. This series, you may hear more art personalities in addition to chats about music. And who knows what else? All right, check it out. And thanks for listening. Today, we've got Nige Rocket and Jeff Williams of the Mighty Onslaught from the UK. I spoke to them at the beginning of this year on the 70,000 Tons of Metal cruise, and they performed twice on the cruise. So we'll talk about how that went. They have a new release out called Origins of Aggression. Check it out. It is a double disc set. Nige had 3 years of downtime while the band covered for him, and he is full speed ahead now that he's recovered. He outlines his journey, and one can only feel for him and for Onslaught while getting through this ordeal. And now they're hitting the road hard. Please welcome Nige and Jeff from Onslaught. You opened the cruise, so you were the first band.
Yep.
When did you find out that you would be the first band?
Literally the morning of boarding, was it?
It was 3 o'clock in the morning before we were set to actually get on the boat. Yeah. At 11 o'clock that same day. Basically, I had jet lag.
3 o'clock your time or 3 o'clock?
No, 3 o'clock. Three o'clock in the morning this time. Oh.
So
literally, what's it, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, yeah, 7 hours before we're actually due to set off to actually get on the boat.
And then you're like, oh, we're opening the entire cruise.
Yeah, I mean, we were joking. I don't know if I can swear on this or not.
Absolutely.
Fucking great. We were talking the day before, and we were saying, we might be able to get rehearsal on the boat and, you know, go through a couple of things, you know, because, you know, it's the first show and the first time we've ever played this. It's great. And but imagine if we opened the show, then we're fucked.
And we'll get a massive spanner in the works.
Yeah, then you know, half joking, it was just like, what's the chances of that? And then of course, there we go. And we just like, okay, well, let's just fucking do it then.
So do the bands get a separate notification, or you just look at
the
running order?
Yeah,
like when
it was the running order.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I wanted to wake everyone up. Just like, wake up! We're on first! Stop practicing!
Did you go to the boat sooner than you had planned to?
Yeah.
You did.
Yeah. They were great, mind them.
Yeah.
Because we boarded as soon as we could, which we went, I think, 12 o'clock we got there, didn't we? Quarter to 12. I spoke to one of the production office and I said, look, can we get to the stage ASAP? Like, because everything's going to be kind of chaos on the first band. Even they were still loading PA in when I spoke to the production.
He said,
look, as soon as they're set up, you can get there, which was, turned out, quarter to 3. We could access the stage, which was great. There's a fair few teething problems, but it all worked.
It was great. I mean, to be honest, the crew on 70,000 Tons are exemplary. They're absolutely superb. They couldn't have been any more accommodating. They couldn't have been better. And the only reason that we were a bit thing about it is we just wanted to maybe get rehearsal out of our system, because, like I said, it's Nigel's first gig back in 3 years. It's the first time we've ever played this set. You know, so there's a lot of sort of pressure on your shoulders.
Uh-huh.
You know? But in some way, it was kind of cathartic. So, but it meant that you had to get on there and do it, and not overly
think about it.
Yeah, right. not overly think about it, not overly sort of analyze. So we just
went the guinea pig of the entire cruise. Anyway.
And it was great because everybody, you know, everybody seemed to have a good time.
Luckily, we had our own sound tech, which helped massively. So,
oh yeah.
So that was a godsend, really, wasn't it? Having
sound.
You can tell what bands bring their sound guy, which bands don't. Now, do they give you a choice of like amps and that kind of thing?
Yeah,
like, I want one of those.
Lots of gear.
It's
perfect. We can get pretty much anything you want.
It's been incredibly well run. Yeah, it's brilliant.
So how did you feel after 3 years?
I wouldn't say nervous. I don't tend to get nervous, but apprehensive was more. And then especially when we're put on this first band, I mean, there's potentially so many problems, which unfortunately did happen for me. But the monitor desk broke down literally before we started to sound check as well. And it was like I said, I knew something was going to happen, but it all came together in the end and it worked.
So you say in when it worked, but when you're on stage and it's the first time for you and you're a road dog, you're a terrible performer.
Yeah.
How was that?
I mean, I'm still rehabilitating a lot.
Sure.
And having the two spine operations took a lot out of me physically. I actually lost a lot of muscle mass over that time, which is still coming. I've only just a couple of weeks ago been allowed to start using physical weights to build myself back up. So I'm still quite weak.
Yeah.
And as far as performing goes, I think I've still got about 30 or 40% to go, I think. Some of the songs, the newer stuff is quite taxing for me to play. Okay. I'm not there yet. The Power From Hell stuff's a bit more basic, so I'm kind of okay on that.
Was it your idea to do those sets because of the situation?
No, I mean...
It's the anniversary, it's the 40th anniversary, so it just seemed like the right time to do it, yeah.
And it just worked out for me fine to come back. These songs were a little easier than the latter Onslaught stuff, you know, so... I mean, I've been sat at home 2-3 hours every single day just going through this and trying to get myself in the best position. I mean, still a little bit wobbly on my feet even, but last night was good. I was quite happy with how it went, really. Yeah. I mean, I got to get my stagecraft back, that's for sure, but it's to be expected.
The fact that you're here and that you're playing, that's what really matters. It shows.
Yeah.
It was awesome. Did you ask to not have a spotlight on you?
No. I asked our sound guy because he was up next to the lighting guy. I said, can you please ask the lighting guy to make sure that the stage is very brightly lit because I need to see where I'm going all the time because of my balance issues. Like,
and that obviously came across as more strobes because that's what seemed to happen, wasn't it? It was just like a massive strobes, which is you know, fun, but not... The thing about that stage, it's a great stage, but it's nice rig. So the majority of the lighting rig is over the audience. There's a minimal amount on the stage.
Yeah.
So, you know, as many lights as they've got, they can focus onto the stage, but the majority, because it's an ice rink, you know, during the day, is there.
There's probably a lot of spotlights too, I would guess, if it's an ice rink.
It was weird, because Trina took loads of pictures and videos from the front. It's like, where am I? It's like,
oh, you were in the dark.
Yeah.
I honestly thought that you had maybe requested.
No, not at all, no. It might have been a good idea. but no, I didn't request it. I asked for a lot of light, to be honest, which obviously didn't come to.
The light guy must have been German. Well, I love German. Oh, I had no idea that you did the artwork.
Yeah. Okay, so I've been doing the majority of the artwork since Killing Peace. And then the ones that I haven't done the covers, I've done the layout and done the additional artwork and whatever. It's just something that I've always done. I went to college and did a qualification in sort of fine art. And then during COVID, because obviously that, you know, it just... went to show how nebulous the music business actually is.
Yeah.
So I went back to university and I did a master's in graphics.
Oh, wow.
But I've been doing the artwork before then, but it just helped like, hone the craft. Uh-huh. Yeah, it's something that I've always been interested in. But when I was a kid, one of the first things I ever wanted to do was be a commercial artist. Then a guy called Matthew Galloway sat next to me in art class and he had a guitar and I was fucked from then basically because that's all I wanted to do.
It's nice to keep it in house. Everything's under our control.
It just keeps everything on brand. So I thought that most of the merch designs and the backdrops and whatnot as well. So
I noticed in the banner, it looks like the background from the last album is in the letters, but then you've got the old logo.
That's it, yeah. It's the logo from Sounds of Violence, but with the Earth Power from
Earth.
Just to freshen it up a little bit.
That's great. I noticed that you don't repeat producers, although the band is listed as producer for the last couple.
Yeah, we always produce our own stuff, and we just tend to get a mix guy in at the end. I mean, we feel we've been around long enough to know how our song should be. We don't need somebody to tell us how to write or to structure songs. It's what the fans have liked, so it obviously works, and we just get a good guy in at the end to mix the albums.
Basically, what happens is the songs are written, then we try to find somebody that we like the sound of the albums, that we want the songs to sound like, if that makes any sense.
Totally.
You know, I mean, everybody that we've worked with has been fantastic. So it's not, you know, anything like, oh, we don't want to work with, you know. It's just that we want a certain ambience or a certain feel.
Uh-huh.
Like some producers can do that sort of feel a little better than us,
basically. That's great, though, because a lot of bands will stick with a producer, and then a lot of their albums have the same feel, but it's almost like you raise your own bar and then you listen for what someone else is doing.
Yeah, I mean, we got a couple of go-to guys really who we'd like to stick with because they just deliver the goods at the end of the day, and they're talented enough to make each album sound different. We don't want it to sound like the last album, so they are good enough to come up with a new sound. And it works. We seem to have a affinity towards Scandinavian mixers, some reason, don't they? They just deliver.
There seems to be an aggression in the mix. It just suits the cold and heartless. And
the weather here sucks. You're the only band, I think, that brought two banners.
Oh, is it?
I haven't seen everybody, but
I mean, it just looks nice when you do two different sets. You've got different images behind you, so it's a bit more special, I think.
So did you plan to just do the end of the set, or how did that happen?
We obviously rehearsed all the Power from Hell stuff, which was kind of less stressful for me. It's not as technical, it's not as fast. So we were hoping that I could do some of the four stuff, which it was sounding not acceptable really to play live. So we decided to take a couple of songs out and do the songs that I'm comfortable with at the moment, which was the two that we played. So maybe it felt a bit awkward for me, but I think it was just a little bit different for the fans to come on in the end and do two tracks that they're not expecting, I guess. Again, as I said, I was a bit apprehensive, but last night the boat was quite wobbly. My balance isn't the greatest at the moment.
Well, at least you had lighting, though, last night.
Yeah, that was... But we had a few technical problems again. The wireless systems weren't working, so I had to go on a wire.
Well, that's good, having like a tripping hazard in there on purpose.
I could have had somebody holding it up and pulling me around with it. But Trina was washing from the side, and she was like, every time the wire, like, it was cool. In the end, I just stayed where I was. It didn't move.
But it was great.
Yeah, it felt really good. Felt really good.
I had no idea that your singer could play guitar.
Yeah. Wow. He stood in for me for the past 3 years, which is great, because we kept everything in-house. We didn't have to get anybody in, as you like, to cover for me. So
you've really been doing shows, Onslaught shows, during this whole period of time?
I haven't done anything three years.
But Onslaught has.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we've done loads. Festivals
really?
Constantly. No touring, but all festivals.
Yeah.
And we've done lots of festivals in... We came over to the States, done California Death Fest, Maryland Death Fest a couple of years ago. I think that was nearly 3 years. I think that was my first ones I missed, probably. Though I did come over because we got inducted into the Metal Hall of Fame at Maryland. We did that. They presented us the things on stage.
That's cool.
So I actually came over with the band for that one.
Did you get a statue?
It's like a gold guitar-y statue type thing. It's
really?
Cool. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it was nice. So, I came over with that, but I found it quite difficult to go to shows sometimes,
just
feeling really detached from it. So kind of took a complete step back after a while, just to let them get on. I didn't want to put no pressure on them as well. But no, they've done an amazing job without me. So, as I said, David's playing guitar. It just works so well.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, we've done loads. Mainly in Europe. I think mostly in Europe. It's been, aside from those two death fests.
I have to commend you for being unstoppable.
I don't give up too easy.
That's great, though.
But it seems that for the last 3 years, and it's just one thing after another. It's like...
Yeah. But there's a little bit of a light now.
I got my final... Because I had a cancer on my eyeball as well, which was like totally random place to get it.
Yeah.
Which was left undiagnosed for like 5 years, 6 years maybe.
And you didn't have any issues with your vision?
No, not really. It was kind of more so on the white of my eye. Like, it just didn't look nice. But my GP told me it was nothing to worry about and that they wouldn't remove it. And it was only when I went for an eye check at the opticians that they said, that's not good, there's something wrong with it. So I went to the eye hospital and it was diagnosed with eye cancer.
Jesus.
Yeah. So I got my last, on the 18th of February, it's my last checkup on that, so it should be all gone, crossed.
Good.
That's so great. Yeah.
I really wanted to ask you about the past because I know the scene that Onslaught came from is really the scene that I grew up with.
The
Discharge and Broken Bones, all the stuff. But for me, I guess, that's really where I grew up.
Yeah.
And learned about doing everything yourself and fuck everybody.
Yeah.
What was that like, starting a band and really being in that world? Because it was so lawless.
Well, we were, it was very, especially where we came from, it was very lawless. Like, we were just three guys who went to school together originally, went to the local youth club, but me and the guy who mainly started a band, Paul Hill, we used to travel all over the country watching Discharge, GBH and stuff, like just sleeping rough and wherever you could find a place to get your head down. Which led to some very interesting moments over the years. We got to know the guys in the band. We'd be guest list all the time. And then we thought, we love doing this so much. Why don't we actually start a band?
Did you play guitar?
No, that was the problem. Neither of us could play. So a slight hitch in the plan. But,
so many bands started out not knowing how to play.
Yeah. And luckily, a band called Vice Squad.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They lived, the guitarist of Vice Squad lived literally half a mile from me. So I seen him at a gig in Bristol and got chatting to him after. He said, just come down, have a coffee line, I'll go through some stuff with you. So I bought a guitar, I still didn't know how to play it. I went down with Dave and probably did 6 weeks. He'd go in, pop down, have a coffee, and he showed me the basics and that was it. And we were up and running.
Really?
Yeah. So, sadly, he's passed away now. But yeah, it's all started from there, really. From then on, I just practice, and attained quite a reasonable or decent enough standard to go and play and write some songs.
Definitely.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was cool. We got a new product coming out, hopefully soon. It's taking forever, but... Instead of re-recording Power From Hell, which a lot of bands do, and we've done it ourselves, I think it's one of those albums that are kind of, maybe it would be a bit sacrilegious to record it. I don't know. The fans are very precious about that record. So what we've done is we've recorded a few tracks off of there, re-recorded, just to bring it up to date a little bit, and some other Onslaught tracks between 83 and 90 we've done. But then it's going to be a double album. So we've done another album of tracks, cover tracks of bands that made Onslaught want to start. And things like we'd be at rehearsal and we'd jam certain tracks all the time. And every song, every cover we've done has got a story behind it. So we've written a little story of what this track has done for us and why. So it's kind of interesting. There's a load of punk stuff on there, obviously.
Oh, God, that sounds great.
It sounds really good. I'm really happy with how it's come out. So.
Oh, that's cool. So is the production done?
Yeah. It's all finished, mixed. The videos are done. Just waiting for the record label to get their ass in gear. So, yeah, it should be, hopefully. And we're
Would you ever consider playing like Rebellion?
Yeah, I mean, they asked us, I think that was probably 3 or 4 years ago. Again, I was out of it, but definitely, I'd definitely be up for it if they... Yeah, I got loads of mates go, obviously, like that. But yeah, I'd like to. If they ask us again, I'm sure we'd do it. Like, it gets quite busy, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. It's a load of fun. It's pretty wild. But I'm 2 years ago, I think GBH played and Discharge played.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not really sure who's in the band from back in the day.
Or in either of the bands. Discharge's got Tez, Bones and Rainey. So three out of the originals,
right?
And I think GBH. I mean, Ross lives in America now, so I don't know. Maybe he plays when they go there, but he doesn't come back for UK shows. I don't think so. It's just two originals in GBH.
Oh, got it. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, we always go and see them. Much to Trina's, she doesn't really like Discharge that much. But
they've had their moments. I remember seeing them when they had that sort of Led Zeppelin-ish album.
Oh, yeah, that was shocking. Absolutely shocking.
It was a big New York show. I think it hadn't... That's what they started with. And everyone was kind of like, wow.
Yeah, it was a big left-field move, wasn't it? I mean, I'm a massive Discharge fan, but that was too much for me.
Yeah.
But I think at the moment they're on fire. They're the best I've seen them live at the moment.
Oh, good.
Even without Cal, obviously, but the new guy, he's really good vocalist. Sounds a lot like Cal, obviously. Now they're great, and he sounded really good. Adding with Tez playing guitar now. Two guitars sounds even more powerful.
Oh, yeah.
So, how did you find Blackpool? Do you like Blackpool?
Blackpool? I like Blackpool in like a weird... This place is fucked up like that way. Like, it's not dangerous. It's just...
No, shit.
it's just sort of low level. But Blackpool is... It reminds me of the Jersey Shore because it's seedy. But the Winter Gardens, where that is, have you ever been there?
Not to the Winter Gardens. No. I've been to Blackpool loads of times.
Okay. The Winter Gardens is an amazing venue. It's very well put together.
And Winter Gardens is... quite a well-known place, isn't it? They used to be massive back years ago for your big artists. Like, I guess Blackpool was a little bit more upmarket at that time, but it's
It definitely isn't upmarket now.
No, not now, no, sure. That's for sure.
How did you end up with Neil Turbin coming in?
God.
If you don't want to talk about it, that's fine.
No, it's all out there, isn't it? Sai's son, he had some kind of illness or something, some illness, and he was... So I felt he couldn't go away for the length of time. And I think that tour was 6 weeks. So it was a long time. And he felt he couldn't leave his boy at that time. He was reasonably young. Like, so we didn't want to cancel the tour because obviously people had put in a lot of hard work into that tour. So we had a thing. And I met Neil Turbin at Sweden Rock, I think in 2006. He seemed a really nice guy. Like, it's obviously... thrash metal stuff and could hit the high notes, and so I got in touch with him. I said, yeah, 100% up for it. Like, so I think we had 3 months, 4 months lead time for him to, so I sent over the set, like, keep in touch with him every couple of weeks. I'm out on the beach every day listening to the tracks, keeping fit and what have you. Like, okay, brilliant. First show of the tour was in New York. Obviously, you need to impress. There is going to be quite a few press people there. So he turns up and he's got like a lorry load of luggage with him, like this. we're in a splitter bus. Like,
how are
you going to get all this in? Like, it's not happening. Sorry.
Is he like a fashion guy?
No, I don't. Well, the story went on and on and on. I mean, there's some things I won't say, but. The worst part on the first date was then he pulls out this stand, sets his iPad up on the center of the stage, and says, what the fuck are you doing, man? I need this. I haven't learned all the words. Like, well, you've had 4 months. Like, of course, that got picked up on by press straight away, and there's videos of him using this thing. I said, how can you use that when people are, like, possibly coming on stage and stage diving and stuff? You're going to get it fucked. Like, so that carried on. It never went away. Every night, even over 6 weeks, it never went away. And there were certain incidents, we shall say, with alcohol. A bottle of whiskey went missing. The promoter, aside from my rider, he'd give it us because he was a fan of the band. It's a gift for me. Like that disappeared. Then certain things followed on. The guitar got hit over, and then somebody got threatened, and I said, "Dude, you got to leave. You have to go." Like,
wow.
Or it's gonna get messy. Which he did. He phoned his mate up, come and picked him up, and off he went. But it left us three shows short at the end of the tour with no vocalist. Yeah. So, I write all the vocal parts anyway, but I can't necessarily sing them, I think. Especially playing guitar. It's something I'd never done, because if I write the vocals, I'm sat down, obviously, or we're in the studio producing it, so I never actually really get to play it and sing. So, and we were finishing up at the Whiskey, which was a prestigious show.
That's like venue, yeah.
So I think the first night was an absolute disaster, because I was still trying to get my head around what was going on. So by the time we got to the Whiskey, it was sold out as well. So we had, I think we had Artillery with us and another band, VX36, I think. All great guys. So we got a plan. I said, "Look, can you help us out with where I'm going to struggle? Do some BVs, come up and join in the songs," like, which is what we did. We got to the Whiskey, it was packed. So I went on stage, explained what was going on, because rumors had gone around anyway. It kind of lightened the atmosphere, if you like.
Yeah. Well, then the audience is with you.
Oh yeah, massively. Yeah, it really worked. Yeah. And the first couple of songs I could do quite competently, like. And the place just went absolutely fucking insane. Like, we were chatting to one of the guys who was there last night. Like,
oh, wow.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, but yeah, I mean, it was brilliant. They all helped out with the songs, and the night was just amazing. It couldn't have gone better. Like,
that's great.
We were chatting to all the bouncers after, like, these huge black guys who, like, not into metal in the slightest. Like, and they were all buying shirts and like, "Oh, it's the best show we've seen." Like, in the Whiskey, they absolutely loved it. Like, so we pulled it off in the end. With no thanks to Mr. Turbin. Yeah, but it worked brilliant. Like, absolutely amazing night it was.
That ties everything up with a bow, like how unstoppable you are and how dedicated
are. Yeah, I mean, a lot of bands, I think, would have just packed up gear and gone home.
Your dedication and your commitment is just top notch. It's really, like...
Thanks.
It's pretty amazing.
It had to be done, really. It was a kind of shit or bust situation, really.
Yeah.
You're either going to fucking screw yourself big time or win the day, which we did in the end. And it kind of masked over what had gone before a little bit. So it paid off.
That's really great. I love hearing that.
Thanks to Nige and Jeff for making some time for the interview. Thanks to the staff on the 70,000 Tons of Metal Cruise, 70,000tons.com, that is. For actually arranging interviews during an insane weekend. The next cruise is January 29th to February 2nd. Their website is 70,000tons.com. The 70,000 is in numbers. Onslaught's details are as follows. Instagram is Onslaught UK Official. On Facebook, they can be found as Onslaught Facebook. And the Onslaught website is powerfromhell.com. Catch them somewhere soon. Thank you for tuning in. More on the way. My Instagram handle is one word, Diane Kamikaze. Kamikaze ends with an E. Follow me there. The full link to my index of shows can be found on wfmu.org/playlists/DK. So that's playlists, plural, and then the DK is both uppercase, capital letters. Send me email, diane@wfmu.org, and be sure to subscribe to the show, and if you like it, review it. Thank you. Diane's Kamikaze Fun Machine radio show can be heard on the WFMU Rock and Soul radio stream. That is New York time, 9 a.m. on Wednesdays. Thank you, thank you. See you next time. Always have fun. Self-expression is vital. Do it.